I myself am quite tolerable. Practical. Tolerable, practical magician.
Welcome to Lost Hope. My name's Bubba, and with me is Mr. Catfish.
Why, thank you, Bubba.
Catfish, we have just seen Chapter 6, Oof. The Black Tower.
Wow.
Let's get right to it. Let's hear your rating out of 10.
Wow. I am going to give it... Oh, boy. I kind of hate to do this, but I have to. I have to give it 10 ravens pecking through a mirror. I give it a 10. I'm giving it 10 out of 10.
Well, Catfish,
mm-hmm.
I hate for this to be boring, but I'm going to give this
yes.
10 what I like to call triple C's out of 10.
Triple C's?
Yeah. Crazy cat crones. I'm going to give this
crazy cat crones.
10 out of 10. Catfish, why did you go 10 out of 10? Let's hear it.
Wow. There's so much going on
that
is amazing in this. First of all, the name of the actor plays Jonathan Strange, Birdie
Carvel.
That scene, I didn't think it could happen to me in this series. There's so many things that have happened. That scene when he's begging the man with the thistle down hair, please.
Right.
That scene broke my heart. That was an amazing scene. I felt so much for him, and I mean, the rest of everything that's going on is amazing. It's just amazing. And, you know, obviously, we talked about this, that I'm not a fan of the book. I thought it was boring. This is an amazing story, very well told. There is a slight advantage. I mean, we do the Joffrey podcast.
Yeah.
There are so many different stories going on in that, so many things set in motion, that it's almost impossible to stick it. I mean, we complain about this and that. But to be honest, I don't know if anyone could stick the landing because so much is in motion. This is a single story, but it is being handled beautifully. It was written beautifully. It's being performed amazingly. And I just, you know, hopefully this show is going to gain a lot of listeners. And at some point, again, in 2018 or 19, people will be listening to this podcast that will live on. And they will be as happy with the show as we are.
Yeah. This episode, I've now watched it 4 times.
4 times.
And when you watch it that many times, you start to see little moments like, I might have changed this or that. But, Catfish, I want to go back to the novel. This is when we had our preview podcast, and you were talking about the reasons why you didn't love the novel.
Right.
You said, and I want to remind
everybody, that the novel
didn't have conflict.
Right.
And you said, I would talk about, I love at the end, it was such a page turner. And you were like, it is never a page turner. Now, to let you slide, Catfish, I will say that the language that she writes it in, she doesn't write it like a modern novel. She writes it as if it was written back here in 1806.
Right,
and so that does make it tough. But if you can get into the language, this is the thrill that I was experiencing. This was like, holy crap. This is when I could not flip the pages fast enough. I was losing facts. I was blowing by footnotes. I was like, holy crap. This is incredible.
I didn't feel this way about the book.
Right.
But obviously, that's the source material, and they're doing a great job of it here.
Right. So we have not seen the final episode. We haven't seen
the seventh episode. I begged you not to see it.
Right.
And for some reason, you paid attention
to
me.
So we don't know if they stick the landing, and I've heard that they've had to make... So far, it's been very, very faithful to the novel, but I've heard because that ending... For a TV budget and for other reasons, that's probably the most they've had to tweak is what people tell me, is that seventh episode has the most tweaking going on in it. But if they stick this landing, this thing has just been awesome. This thing, just give it to your friends. Let the people know this is a great-ass miniseries.
It is amazing. And we, you know, I think part of my rating for the final episode will be impacted by whether we actually get anything from BBC America as promised.
Well, okay, Catfish, let's get to it.
Okay.
BBC America, they sent me something on Twitter that they would mail me something this most recent week.
Most likely,
I'm assuming it was after San Diego Comic-Con. But so far, I've received nothing.
Okay, well,
I've received absolutely nothing.
Mailing
to give
something
away.
One week does right. not indicate that you're going to receive it the same week.
That's
unless
true. Unless
they use a magic post and it came through your mirror.
My mirrors have not been making any sound. So we hope that we'll be able to give something away to our listeners besides the awesome footnote bell. And let me say, listeners, you have 1 week. You have 1 week left. If you have not done it already, there's two ways you can enter this contest.
Right.
And whatever we may get from writer Peter Harness from BBC America.
Hopefully. He said before BBC was in, he said he would send us a autographed script.
Right.
So maybe we should bug him about that again.
Right. Well,
for that.
Yeah. Well, let me say that the way you guys can enter, and I want everybody, I see all the download stats. There are hundreds of you who haven't entered. There are two simple ways. All you have to do is tweet at us with the hashtag Lost Hope Podcast, or go to iTunes and give us a written review. If you're not in the American U.S., United States iTunes Store, maybe hit me up and say, hey, I left my review there, because I know we've had some
it's very
in the
weird.
U.K., some in Australia.
You have to go and look country by country.
Right, but we want all our listeners eligible to win if, you know, be eligible to win even this awesome Lost Hope Bell. And sure
well,
enough,
if we don't get anything from BBC America, I've got something else in mind, too.
Sure enough, screenwriter Peter Harness tweeted out he wants to be in the contest. So I said, you know, hey, tweet at us and tell us what you thought of this episode, The Black Tower. And Peter Harness, the screenwriter of this wonderful miniseries, he tweeted back and he wrote, I thought it was excellently. I particularly enjoyed the writing.
Oh, wow.
Do I win a bell?
Well, he could win a bell.
He could. Wouldn't that be the most ridiculous thing if he won this bell?
That, you know what? It's we pick the names out of the huge bowl.
We do.
Whoever we pick gets picked.
Let me say.
And I will say this: his chances increase exponentially if BBC America gives us if they give us one prize, then he's got twice as many chances. If they give us two prizes, he's got three times as many
chances.
That's
right, listeners. When you tweeted us, when you enter our contest, when you tweet,
how do they tweet at you?
They tweeted me at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
Wow, or they can hit me up at CJGman67.
Yeah. I mentioned on that podcast where we interview him that he wrote this wonderful miniseries. He wrote probably a trickier adaptation of these wonderful books, the Jackson Brody detective novels written by Kate Atkinson, and he adapted them for BBC, and they were shown on PBS here in the United States. And he's now writing for Doctor Who. I mentioned that Susanna Clarke, who wrote the novel Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell,
Yes. She's
probably listening and wants to put us as characters into her new book.
Yeah, I would be diseased, probably.
Now, don't you think, Peter Harness, he's listening to us, he's like, I've got to write this Doctor Who episode, but I need some colorful characters. I need some people.
Right.
And so I was thinking, you know, he's going to put us in the script, and it'll be like, you know, you see the doctor there, and he goes, I'm the doctor, and I help people. It's Bub and Catfish. They're fine. Can't help everybody. TARDIS is broken. Let him die.
Oh, nice. Nice. A little shout out.
Right. That's all we ask.
Little hidden thing.
All right. Let's do the housekeeping real quick. Listeners, if you are all a fan of Game of Thrones or George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire novels, please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, and download our podcast about that entitled The Joffrey Podcast. If you're interested in a vampire apocalypse show that's currently being shown here in the States on the channel FX, it's entitled Got Your Milk. We've got new episodes coming out this week. Please.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we do.
Oh, boy. You think it'll get a 10 tonight, Catfish? I don't think so.
Definitely not a 10.
And if you're at all interested or reading Harper Lee's precursor to her classic To Kill a Mockingbird, her new novel entitled Ghosts at a Watchman, please go to iTunes and download Bubba and Tasha's Ghosts at a Watchman read-along podcast. We've read the first 30% of the book. It hasn't turned bad. It's kind of hasn't had any trouble yet so far. It's just kind of like reintroducing the characters. And we're following along with the book. And it's pretty fun. And so far, like I said, the book is fine. There's nothing to be upset about yet.
Okay. All right.
In the first 100 pages or so.
And I'm pitching that in the future, the Double P Podcast Network does a recap of Ash versus the Evil Dead, which starts on Halloween.
Halloween on here in the United States on the Starz Movie Network. I got to do a couple things before we dive into this perfect episode.
Okay, do them.
I've talked about this a couple of weeks, how I went to the... I was interviewing the wonderful John Repien from DailyGrail.com, who wrote those great articles about fairies.
You're always rubbing that in my face, yes.
And so I went to... Because he knows so much stuff. I really didn't know anything about fairies, so I went to Wikipedia and I looked up fairies. And I read this on Wikipedia. I keep mentioning it. So here is... If you go to just any... Go to the Wikipedia entry on fairies. It says... Quote, a far more dangerous behaviors of fairies have been attributed. Any form of sudden death might stem from a fairy kidnapping, with the apparent corpse being a wooden stand-in for the appearance of the kidnapped person. Then the very next sentence says, consumption, tuberculosis, was sometimes blamed on the fairies, forcing young men and women to dance at revels every night, causing them to waste away from lack of rest. Do you think Susanna Clarke just went to Wikipedia to get inspired by what happens in this book?
You know, I wish Jonathan Strange had gone there first.
Yeah, why didn't he? Come on.
I don't know.
You could
go
to Wikipedia or you could look in this bowl of water. Come on. Do it one more time.
The only Wikipedia back in those days was the entirety of Mr. Norrell's
library. One final thing before we jump into this. I went on to Amazon and ordered the Blu-ray release because I want this. I love this show so much. I love this miniseries so much. I wanted my own copy of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. And I was a bit blown away by the U.S. cover of the Blu-ray. And so I tweeted it out and I was like, people, which do you prefer? Do you prefer the U.S. version of the Blu-ray cover? Or do you prefer the BBC, if you live in the United Kingdom, in England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, that area, if you like that cover. And I seem to have ignited a huge debate. There were sorts of responses. So first, before we get to the debate, Catfish, why don't you review? This is the American version of the cover. What do you think?
Well, I will say, first of all, the text sort of has kind of a Harry Potter feel to it.
Yeah, and Mr. Norrell's name ended up really small.
Really small, exactly. There's a lot of magic going on on the cover. The man with the thistle down hair has got a little magic going on in his hands. There's something going on with Jonathan Strange. And then below Jonathan Strange, there's two people taking away...
Lady Pole after she shot.
Yes, but there's kind of a magic bubble over her. This is a very busy cover.
Right.
It's exceedingly busy.
It's got Jonathan Strange is a big picture in the center. And then Mr. Norrell... Goodness gracious, poor Mr. Norrell, his head is about the same size as the gentleman with thistle down hair. Not only his name in a much smaller font, but he's kind of getting similar credit to Arabella and Vinculus in the Blu-ray cover. Now, here is the classic picture that's on the BBC Blu-ray cover, and this is the picture of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell standing in front of the fireplace.
Right, and first of all, the text, the font... is the same font from the book.
Right. It's very faithful to the book. You see a raven, I believe, back on the fireplace. But what's interesting is, so we had this debate on Twitter, and I want to read everybody's response.
But first, let's finish describing it.
Sure, let's hear
Mr. Norrell's sitting in a chair looking
sour on his face.
Jonathan Strange is standing up, very erect with his arms behind his back, and with a slight smile on his face. But this, to an American audience, says...
Oh, see, I love that picture of two covers. I like it, but as I replied to people on Twitter, it doesn't say magic. If you
saw
this,
it doesn't tell you. Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It looks like an upstairs, downstairs.
Right.
You know, the American one, however, is promising a little bit more bang. Oh, and also we didn't notice on the American one.
Yeah.
Mr. Norrell sort of has a smile on his
face.
That's
as close as he gets to a smile.
That's as close as he gets to a smile. It's true.
All right. Well, I personally, because I know the story, I like the UK one better. But if the Blu-ray is supposed to be kind of an advertisement to get people who don't know the story to buy it...
You for sure would want the American one.
All right. So let's get to some of the debate. So,
okay.
Ashlyn Marie Strange, who's at Teller Marie, says, I don't know which one I like best. They both look amazing. I guess I'm more drawn to the United States one, where somebody who's C.H. Mayer tweeted, I prefer the Brit version. We Yanks got a bunch of photos photoshopped together. Boring. Joe, at Solitary Joe, said she preferred the United Kingdom one. And then... at Faceless Author said he was with Solitary Joe. He prefers the United Kingdom one. The twinkle in Bertie Carvel's eyes is magic enough. And then Joe says that in the American version, Childermass didn't make the cover. She says she can't forgive that. Faceless Offer was like, it just needs everyone or just the magicians. The roles are so equal, you can't leave people out like Childermass. Claire, who's right. at Imagine Benedict, she tweeted, it's nice, Birdie mysterious and dashing, but she prefers hers, once again, the UK. Our good friend Black Eye, at Black Eyed Lily, Susan Stacy said, where's Childermass? And of course, at Fat Monster, who's Matt Foster on Twitter. He says, it's great, but where's Drawline?
Everybody, you see what happens when you start throwing a bunch of people in, then there are people that are missing. I will say this. I think that the American one sort of it seems to be selling something that's a little bit more lighthearted than the show actually
is. Oh, yeah,
is.
That's for sure. After this episode, yeah. Hey.
But if you had the British one in America and people hadn't heard it, it's a hard sell. You're not getting any idea of magic really at all.
Right. Yeah, it just looks like a period piece. And dare I say it, a lot of period pieces are attractive to female purchasers, and there's not even a woman on the cover of the other one. So
yeah, but there is the camel toe on this cover.
Edit, everyone. And that is our sure sign that it's time to jump into chapter
is
6.
It?
The Black Tower. Yes, it is. Run away from that comment, everyone. So this previously on jumped around all previous 5 chapters, I think. They're trying to get you to remember everything. Why? Mm-hmm. Because it all starts coming together now. And we begin in jolly old London, where we see a lot of the streets are paved with these signs that say, Wanted, Jonathan Strange, he's a fugitive. And of course, that gets plastered over, papered over with what? But an ad for Jonathan Strange's book. Hey!
I would put him right next to it. I mean, it's kind of like...
Right.
You don't want to... I mean, the fact that the fugitive is sort of a selling point. You don't want to obliterate that altogether.
Why didn't O.J. come out with a book? O.J. should have come up with a book, you know, when he was a
and
fugitive.
And I'm the one that's in trouble.
Right, in the White Bronco, my time with O.J. All right, let's continue on. And then, of course, the book has been released. Mr. Neural didn't want it released at all, but it is.
And I was surprised
out.
That it got released after all the brouhaha, well, especially since he's a fugitive.
It had a very short release.
Well, that's true, but I was surprised that it wasn't stopped. And we do see the dedication to his wife. And, of course, Norrell knows that, you know, he feels a little bad about that. Still never feels bad enough to actually do anything or make reparations.
No, but now why?
He's skimming through the book.
He's skimming.
He seems a little bored at some point.
You say that, but there's a tear rolling down the side of his face.
Yeah, but you see he's flipping through. He's like, okay, this part's boring.
No, I don't think he thinks it's boring, catfish. He's thinking, oh, these things, these fairy magic. Oh, why didn't I tell him? And then we go back to the publisher's
house. I
thought
he was going to wrap the book up. I didn't know what he was going to do.
Right,
he puts his hand on his book and he starts to do something. I'm like, what the
chandelier,
heck can he possibly
the chandelier
do?
Starts
right,
to
when
shake.
The chandelier go, I thought, is he bringing the man with the thistle down hair?
No, but get ready. We are back at book publisher Murray's place. Now, catfish, let's have a...
Okay.
Footnote. Now, you said that this book publisher looked like American actor from Cheers, George Wendt.
And I still stand by that
he
statement.
He does. No, he does. But do you know who this book publisher actually is on our first footnote of the episode?
You mean the actor or the
actual
real-life publisher?
Do you know who the actor is?
I do not know who he is.
This actor is named John Sessions. And you're like, John Sessions, how do I know that name? Well, if in the...
Because I think John Sessions ran the FBI. That's how I know that name.
This different John. This
okay.
John Sessions.
Got it.
If you watched on Comedy Central here in the United States, the original Whose Line Is It Anyway? You know, the original British cast.
I did watch some of that.
This John Sessions, he was the guy who they would switch out people every week, but he was the guy who was on there every week. He was the one consistent improviser, and he... Let's just say he hasn't aged too well. I know now he's got this wig on... But he's definitely put on some weight when he's not running out there to, you know, when he's not running out to do a scene with Colin Mockery. He has definitely put on some weight. But if you go back. Yeah.
I'm looking this guy up.
Remember him?
Yes.
Doesn't he look familiar?
He has not aged well. I'm going to tell you exactly what he's done.
Okay.
But I can tell you without looking one thing he has done, and that's eat.
He's eaten a lot.
Wow, that is just amazing.
It is. Can you believe it?
I used to watch a lot of the British Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. He's still getting it done. By getting it done, I mean with a fork and knife.
Hey, now, poor John Sessions. Wonderful, wonderful actor here as book publisher Murray. And he's so happy, he's like, the only thing better than with a fugitive bookseller is you don't know where to send the royalties to, so I guess I'll just keep them.
Right, exactly. I love it.
Oh, and Catfish.
Yes.
Who is it again? In episode 4, I asked you if we would ever see these two guys again, and you said no way. But yes, it's Gett Coleman Tatney, the people from Nothingshire, a.k.a. Nottingshire.
The guys who wanted to play pool.
Right. The first time they came down, they were like, Mr. Tatney's going to be trained in magic by Jonathan Strange. And that turned out to be not so good. Now they've come all the way back to London again, and guess what? It's just so they can get ripped off by their books. These guys have the worst luck.
Wow.
Suckers. So, were you happy that Mr. Neural finally did something to stop this book from getting out?
Absolutely not, because I still don't think that the book itself would have caused trouble.
Well, we don't know. It could have a lot of things talking about, you know, once again, dangerous fairy magic.
I mean, the thing about Mr. Norrell is always that he's taking a very paternal view of things, like, I know what's right, and you don't, instead of explaining or seeing, he's just like, nope, I'm going to shut that whole avenue down.
Well, Mr. Murray, he's upset. He's going to go, I'm going to get Neural, I'm going to sue him. I'm going to make him pay for these advertisements.
I asked you this while we were watching the episode.
Yeah.
And I want to get your answer here now.
Okay.
Okay, so there's a guy who is a magician.
Right.
He's well known.
Yeah.
He can clean clothes. and you're mad at him.
Right.
And do you go and confront him directly?
Look, I spent a lot of money publishing this dang book. You saw those street ads I put up.
Mm-hmm.
I got ads on Fender. I got ads on Twitter.
All the money you spent on those little urchins putting it up, papering it up.
Right, exactly.
How many
hay pennies I had to give out?
I think it's hat penny.
Listen, a hay penny will do.
I still think it's a bad idea.
Bad idea. So you don't think what Mr. Murray's doing here. Go
redress.
To the courts.
Well, I'll just say this.
Yeah?
Do we ever see him again?
Oh, you think Mr. Murray went the way of the book?
He's gone.
Right.
As far as I know, he's gone.
No, boy.
He is disappeared.
Poor Mr. Murray.
You know what? I'm gonna do it this week.
Uh-oh, you're going to do it? Let's hear it.
He's my first nominee for Magician of the Week.
How did he get nominated? What does he do to deserve a Magician of the Week title?
He made a lot of food disappear.
Hey, leave John Sessions alone.
Hey, you know what? I can give people a hard time for being overweight. I'm overweight now myself.
Okay, all right. Now, we leave him and we go to Venice, Italy. Catfish. Mm. Looking at this opening shot of Venice, this looks like it wasn't too far from where our hotel in Venice was, does it?
Yeah, true. Right there in the back is where you said, screw you for getting me lost. I'm going back to the hotel.
No. This is real close to our hotel because that's like the cathedral, the church, or the art museum right there. Okay, but who is there? We should not even have any lightness because Jonathan Strange is trying to work up some Double M. Madness medicine. He is trying to drive himself nuts. What do you think he's taking here? What potions that is popular with the poets do you think he's taking? Popular with the poets?
Oh, no. But the poets aren't brought up till later. I don't think this potion has anything to do with the poets.
I don't know. He's definitely trying to make himself mad. He makes this gross-looking stuff.
Yeah, no, I think it's just, you know what it is?
What is it?
I think it's the early 1800s version of the Cinnamon Challenge.
That's kind of what it looks like, the Cinnamon Challenge. And so, he takes this potion. He reads his formula again. He tries to call a fairy. And he looks, once again, give it up to Bertie Carvel. I wanted to mention his episode in the last episode where he was barged into Mr. Norrell's house and he has that smile on his face when he finally realizes why Mr. Neural won't tell him how he brought Lady Pole back. It's great. But
he does succeed.
He's always able to call the gentleman with Thistledown here.
But he never knows.
He doesn't see him. Damn it. How frustrating.
And it turns out that the Cinnamon Challenge is super bad for your hair.
Right. So then he's going to need some Rogaine for... And we cut from that to a brand new character. Get ready, everybody. Here she is. It's time for another footnote.
Okay.
As we meet Miss Delgado. Now, Miss Delgado is an old woman living in Venice in a section of the Jewish ghetto called Caranegrio. She's of mingled Hebrew and Christian descent. She once possessed the remarkable ability of mastering every language known to man. But at the time we meet her here, she's old and extremely mad. She lives frugally in her apartment with 50 cats. She's living off the charity of the residents there in the ghetto. And what's, of course, note is Delgado is her name. Del is Spanish for from the, and gato is means G-A-T-O, in this case, means cat. So Delgado, little fun name that Susanna Clark, author, put into this.
Now, see, what I like here is what you've just described as a footnote.
Yeah.
It was the kind of really important and vital backstory that I'd usually find in the body of the book. And then actually the really interesting things were in the footnotes, which once again is why this book bored me.
This was a wonderful, one of the best books I've ever read. So she has two guests coming to meet her, and these are the Gray Steels. We see in the TV show, his name is Dr. James Gray Steel, and he's a retired physician, and he's a widower, and he's with his daughter, Flora.
Who, even though she doesn't look like it...
Look like what? What do you mean?
Well, I'm just
Look like his daughter? What do you mean?
No, I'm going to say this. She... I'll say it in the reverse way so you won't question me.
Okay.
She looks like she's a very proper, put-together lady. Mm-hmm. But it turns out she's just like... She's kind of like a hippie of the times.
She likes what I like to call double Bs.
Double B.
Yeah, double B is what I use to refer to bad boys.
Yeah. But really, she likes the triple Bs.
Triple Bs?
Brilliant bad boys.
Oh, that's right.
Because it turns out she chased after Lord Byron, who was a well-known hedonist, besides being a poet.
Yeah.
Let's just put it this way. If your daughter chases and runs after Lord Byron and spends any time whatsoever, don't worry about buying a white dress for her wedding.
Oh!
Just saying it.
Catfish.
Just saying.
You are like the TMZ version of 1806.
I'm breaking it down for you. I will say this.
Yeah.
Clearly, I mean, even if it was not Lord Byron,
the
fact that in this day and age she ran after a dude and didn't marry and was away without any supervision.
Oh, come on.
I'd be scandalous no matter what, wasn't the well-known Lord Byron.
I think it was the famous magician Beyonce who said, put a ring on it.
Bay.
Right. Now, the Gray Steels are there because Dr. Gray Steel, Miss Delgado, Mrs. Delgado, excuse me, is related to one of his fellow physicians. And so, if it's technically she's the patient of one of his other fellow physicians. And she is... We've seen a lot of people like Vinculus who are kind of mad. She's in King George III who is mad. But I think Miss Delgado, she takes it 10 out of 10 mad. She is pretty good.
She's full bore. Let's just put it this way. Yeah. If there was a Victorian version of Hoarders, she would be the first person I would want to get on screen.
The only difference between
her and a lot of people on Hoarders now
is
that her cats are still alive.
Catfish. Slandering the good people of Hoarders.
I'm telling you, every time you watch one of those Hoarders episodes, they clean everything up. They find a cat skeleton.
So she picks up what we later find out is a bird.
I thought it was a rat.
Yeah, I couldn't tell what it was, but
delicious.
Later Flora says it's a bird, and she starts eating this bird. And the Gray Steels, they are a proper English family, and they're like, nice to see you. Good day.
Yeah, I think... If you're checking up on someone's health and welfare and you see this, I don't think you'd be like, okay, well, I guess they're fine.
Well, we were asked to come call on you, and we've done that.
Check.
Arrivederci.
Now let's go visit the church.
So as they're leaving, they run into who? Jonathan Strange, who's trying to get more of his potions because that stuff, the cinnamon challenge, didn't make him crazy enough.
Now, the one thing that was surprising about Jonathan Strange
is that
he does not speak the language.
Do you think a lot of people back then were bilingual, trilingual, like knew a lot of other languages? You would think you'd have class, to if you had
right?
to travel.
You get, well, not just that, but you'd get a classical training in like Latin and Greek and stuff like that just because, whatever, there's other people working in the fields. You had more important things to do.
Well, Jonathan Strange, when we first met him, his important stuff was drinking, playing cards, shooting pool.
Right, but he was younger.
Yeah, okay.
You would have thought at least he would have been taught some of it.
And so the Grace deals... and Jonathan end up having a little lunch here
yeah, because
in Venice.
Even though he looks disheveled, compared to the crazy cat lady,
right, he can
he's
go out
a proper
public.
Gentleman.
And he did you notice he's having an egg? Jonathan always loves his egg.
Mmm, delicious egg.
Now, Catfish, do you remember how when we were in Venice, we'd try to go to lunch, and they had their own version of a siesta? Like, you got to go at the right time.
You
so they knew what
to
time
right
to go,
time.
Go. Everybody, Venice is wonderful.
Venice is
10
wonderful.
10 out of 10.
Absolutely.
But they some of the best restaurants close for a little siesta, and you're like,
you should,
oh, come on.
You should go to Venice now. I mean, they're pumping,
what do you mean?
They're pumping water as fast as they can out of there, but they're losing that battle.
Oh, yeah. All right, so Jonathan tells them, hey, I'm here, I lost my wife, and I'm here, and I'm trying to summon a fairy servant. And Dr. Graysteel, he's like, check.
right. And she's all, and meanwhile,
right.
she's
Flora.
All like,
yeah, Flora's like,
she's like,
oh, hello.
She's like, fairy. She's like, whoa, dangerous.
Oh,
she's
right.
just waiting for him to rhyme with fairy. He's like, fairy and hairy. And she's
scary,
like,
yeah.
swoon.
Oh, for sure. Now, this is a bit of a change of their relationships. In the book, Jonathan becomes very good friends with Dr. Graysteel. And I imagine that may happen in episode 7. I doubt it. I think it's going to constantly be Dr. Graysteel's like, what the hell?
I think that's cats under the bridge by now.
Right. But Flora, she, like you said, Catfish, she's intrigued. She says, you know, I've heard terrible things about fairies. Aren't they bad? And he's like, yes. And he's like, I'm going to go mad. And she's like, well, madness may not be a curse. It may be a blessing. It's been a blessing to like poets like this guy I just got out of a relationship with.
Right. But she's not bitter.
No.
No, she's not like
no.
that bastard Byron.
No, she's still friends with him on Facebook.
Yeah. And if she sees him on Tinder, she might swipe right.
Right, exactly. But Dr. Graysteel makes the mistake of mentioning that they have gone to see Mrs. Delgado and that she is completely mad. And you see it in Jonathan's eyes. He's like, hello.
Yeah, what?
Oh, you have a friend who's mad? This might be able to help me.
Right, but what she's trying to do is get him to use magic to fix her. And he's all like, no, according to this asshole I know, it doesn't work.
Madness can't be used to, you know, magic can't be used to cure madness.
Mm-hmm.
Trademark Gilbert Norrell.
Norrell.
But he sees it. He has a bit of a crazy twinkle in his eye.
Right, which she takes as, hey, all right.
All right.
I got a shot.
I got my in, right.
I got a shot. He's a little nuts. And I like it.
And you could tell he's not really mad yet. He's still a proper gentleman who's just gone through mourning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But back at Starcross Hall, we see that Stephen was bringing the morning tea to Lady Pole, and instead he hears the other patient there. Boy, there's no room
right.
at the inn.
Yeah, there's no room at the inn except for a cell.
Right.
Lady Pole's got the nice accommodations, and Vinculus has got the crap ones. Now, this is interesting because I remember that Strange drove her here, but because he was doing all kinds of other things, in other words, he's the one that rode Arabella away.
Right.
I did not realize that he was in residence here.
Stephen, he came back last week when he said Sir Walter Pole wanted me to be with you, Emma, because once you find out Arabella is passed, you might go crazy.
So do you think they're having an easier time now at the regular place now that Stephen's not around? Stephen was the only one who was who was causing all the problems.
Sir Walter Pole's having bachelor night every night.
Well, I wasn't saying that Stephen was. I was saying that, you know, maybe they can get some more country bumpkin servants who won't be afraid of all the bells tingling all
right.
the time.
Right. So, okay. Our boy Vinculus, mm-hmm. Is he mad, yes or no, Catfish? Is he technically mad, or has he just got the sight? So he keeps calling him Nameless Slave.
The rain shall
make a door for me, then I shall go through it.
The reason why he's magical is what we find out later on in the episode.
Yeah.
Is that basically he is the Book of the Raven King. And if you're born like that, obviously it affected him. He's got some sort of magic. I mean, I don't think that you That's not something that you can just be like, okay, I'll be a carpenter now.
Yeah, go be a carpenter. Don't take off your shirt to creep out your customers.
Him. It affected him. And also, yeah. I think somewhere in the Raven King's book, they say, I think it's a sin to clean your teeth.
Or brush your hair, right? Combs are evil.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
But crunches are okay. You can do some crunches.
Now, Stephen is intrigued. He wants to know, Vinculus, how do you know all this stuff? You're saying things that I've heard from the gentleman with Thistledown hair about nameless slaves.
This is very important because it mentions it a few times that Vinculus is like, I can break your chains. I can set you free.
If you'll set me free out of this jail here at Staircross Hall.
Right.
And he says he's got to meet up with a tree catfish.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know. It's better than a tweet up with a tree.
We find out that Lady Pole has constantly been asking for Jonathan Strange, and Segundus finally tells her he's a fugitive, he's disappeared. I could call Norrell. She doesn't like that idea too much, does she?
No, she's like, my mom would kill me. But then she says something interesting we've never heard before.
Never.
It's almost like she's saying, well, screw it, I might as well die.
Right.
She says, just leave me in peace so I can sleep.
Youch, would you? Oh.
Which she's never looked forward to before, and I think she's still not looking forward to.
Right, but why does she want to sleep then? Let me ask you this. Why does she want to sleep? Because you know that's just dancing and madness. Is it because she wants to see Arabella again? Why would she do this?
Well, right before this, she says, you might as well just kill me. I think it's kind of that mode. She's just saying, like, just get out of here. Leave me to my horrific life. You're no help whatsoever.
Right.
I might as well just go to sleep. There's no getting away from it.
Okay.
I don't think she really
wants
to go. She's
like, I got to put in my time at the dance.
Right.
Punch the card. And Stephen, he has a great reaction when he hears her say that. He's like, what? You know, Stephen, you've been so tough on him. Did you come around in this episode on Stephen? He is a guy in a no-win situation. And yes, it's like he's accepted his fate to do these terrible things for the
gentleman. He does talk about it later. When we get to that point, let's talk about it. Because he goes through a few different things in this episode. He does have more going on. But you know, the one thing I realized with this episode, I forgot to say at the top.
What?
The thing that I learned. Every week I learn something new.
Sure.
In this week's episode, I learned that you can't stop the dance.
No, never.
You can't stop the dance.
Never.
No matter what kind of dance it is. I mean, it could be, like this kind of dance.
Right. A waltz, right?
Right. It could be line dancing.
Oh, no.
Yeah. No matter what it is.
Yeah.
You can't stop the dance.
You can't stop the music.
The music, even if the music stops,
right?
The dance continues.
Hell yeah. The scene is sure to remind us that Lady Pole is missing that digit catfish.
Oh, yeah. You know what? That's why.
What? That's why.
That's why she said that to me. I said, yo, Lady Pole, give me your digits. She said, I don't have enough.
Oh,
and I was like, what?
Right.
But now I know why.
No, poor Lady Pole. Well, you only need 9, you know, area code.
Give me your digits.
All right, so
We
go to the House of Commons, and I love this scene. I love this scene where Sir Walter Pole's political opponents are just taking him to task for all the crappiness that's happened. The Joanites up in the north, they've overrun factories. And then it was Sir Walter Pole, it was you, buddy, who brought these magicians into England, one of whom is a fugitive, questioned in his questionable death of his wife, the other a thief.
And now, this came up only in the last episode and this episode. So that's episodes 5 and 6 out of 7.
Right.
About the Johannites.
Sure.
And I kind of feel like it's sort of a red herring. I don't feel like they're foreshadowing that it's going to be a big part of the 7th episode because they brought it up so late. But I want all our listeners to kind of keep an eye on that.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. The main thing it does is it pisses off Sir Walter Pole, who goes straight to Mr. Norrell, and he's like, you can't do that. You can't just steal people's books. And Norrell tries to defend himself. He's like, you think I wanted to do it? I had to. I had to protect. That's a dangerous book, catfish.
Yeah, and he tells him, look, I told yous. I told yous.
Yeah, but Sir Walter Pole's like, look, it's done you no good, Mr. Norrell. It's done me no good. And why can't Norrell... Do you think Norrell's right? Now, we don't know what's in the book, but do you think Norrell's right? That if you let out all this stuff about fairies and the Raven King and the King's Road, that it could cause trouble? Is Norrell correct?
I think better people are better, and it's been shown by this show very clearly.
Yeah.
People are better with all the information.
Okay.
So, yes, let Strange's book come out and then say, look, this is true, but also this is what happens if you deal with fairies.
Hmm. Yeah, but it's like...
He's got the gravitas and the...
it's like putting the fairy back in the mirror. You can't do it once you...
Oh, all right. If you
and
say so.
Now, Mr. Norrell is also PO'd because... He doesn't know where Jonathan Strange is. And I actually, once again, hashtag Team Lascelles, he's like, you don't know where he is? You're the magician. What are you asking me?
Well, and then but then he says he doesn't want me to find him. So it's interesting. He's using some sort of blocking spell.
Right.
Which, important to notice, he can only keep in place when he's not crazy. Later on in the episode, when he goes crazy, they are able to figure out where he is. He can see him.
Oh, well, I don't know if that's it, because Lascelles comes in and he's like, hey, we know Drawlight sent a letter.
Well, let's see what happens when we get there.
Well, listen, I'll be correct.
All right.
All right. But
okay, you can be correct.
Anyway, Childermass is like, look, you want to find somebody? Go to our Minister of Information, Christopher Drawlight.
Now, this is the
one... You liked Drawlight a lot in this episode,
I love
Catfish.
It. But I'm going to say this. This is the only... kind of logical jump they have to make in this entire episode, and I'm not sure why they do
correct.
It to bring Drawlight in. How Drawlight, who's in jail, can hear any of this information that's coming from Venice is beyond me.
Right. Well, there's a fun little
mm-hmm.
footnote in that Drawlight says the hat maker in the cell next to him has given him some information about Jonathan Strange being in Geneva. And then, or maybe Venice. And of course, in the actual novel, Jonathan Strange had gone to Geneva, where he hung out with Lord Byron, and that's where he first encounters.
Oh,
that's where he first encounters the Greysteels.
So she was being very bohemian. She's just like, all right, let's just roll with. We'll go from Byron to Strange. I mean, he's got better information now than when he was free and roaming the streets. It's really super weird. And that's not all that he hears.
Right.
That's
right,
not all
right.
that he hears. He doesn't just hear where he is.
Yeah, he hears what
Jonathan Strange
has been doing.
He hears stuff that, like, pretty much we only know because we see inside Jonathan Strange's room when no one right. else is there. So he's got really, really good information.
Right. Drawlight says that Strange has been taking powders that are all the fashion among the poets, the kinds of things that produce visions of palaces in Xanadu, Christ stuck in the tree and such.
Yeah. So, again, wow. Amazing information that somehow gets from Venice to London to inside the cell.
You think it's
cell.
The magic spoon.
And
Drawlight has lost his wig. He's lost his walking stick. Now he has this magic spoon.
Well, the funny thing is, they thought, we need to get someone who has information. And even though Drawlight's in jail, they're like, Drawlight must know.
Right.
He's got to know.
He's
in the perfect place to get information.
Sure enough. And did you like that Mr. Norrell threatens Drawlight? He's like, tell me. You're going to do what we say, and we're gonna get rid of your debts. But listen to me. I can conjure up terrors, sir, that will frighten you to death.
It's excessive. It's excessive. Basically, all you need to say to Drawlight is, do you want to stay in jail, or would you like an all-expenses-paid trip to Venice?
Right. A Rick Steves all-inclusive.
But shave not included. That's it. You just can't have the shave. But besides that, you're all set. So they send him off, or we think he's going to go off. And then we come back, and we see some funny dialogue here.
Yeah, Dr. Greysteel. I had Game of Thrones sneaking in there again. Dr. Greysteel. He's like, can't we just leave for Genoa? It would be drier, and there wouldn't be quite as many art museums.
Yeah, art museums. Man, who doesn't hate art museums?
Hey, Catfish, I went to the Doge's Palace in Venice. It was great. You should have gone.
That's what I was jealous about, that you did that. Yeah, for sure.
All right, yeah, he doesn't want to see any more art galleries. But
it almost feels like the art galleries are being forced on him. Like, he can't just go, no, I won't go in.
Right, but this is where the episode really... It's been good already. We're only 19 minutes into it. But this is where it really starts to take off when Jonathan Strange comes in to see Miss Delgado. And Catfish, I want to ask you something. Are you still on Team Strange? Because Jonathan Strange is about to offer Miss Delgado the equivalent of a fairy deal. You know what I mean? This is exactly what the gentleman with thistle down here, his type of deal. He's, Jonathan tells her, I will give you whatever you wish, but in return, you must give me something to serve as a symbol, and very importantly, a vessel of your madness. So this is that's just what the fairy does. That fairy says, hey, I'll give you a deal, but you've got to give me some sort of token.
Right, but the token didn't affect the quality of her life. In other words, she wanted to be a cat. She's unmolested as a cat. She got what she wanted. She's not affected or cheated in any way.
You don't think so?
Mm-mm. If she really wanted to be a cat, and after a while, I was like, when she first disappeared, I was like, oh, that's horrible. And then when he pulled her out and he said, and I think Peter Harness makes this clear so that we know what went on.
Right.
He says, okay, now you are exactly what you wanted to be. We see her at the beginning. She's nuts. She's got a bunch of cats around. So you can believe, yes, she wanted to be a cat. Mm. It's not like, okay, I made you a cat, but, you know, you're a deaf cat or you're a blind cat or you're a cat with only two paws. You know, she got exactly what she wanted without him twisting it in any way.
I don't know. I think you're trying to twist it so you can stay on Team Strange.
No, I'm all Team Strange.
You definitely are.
Well, so how did he pervert this deal the way that the deal is always perverted when you deal with the man with the thistle down here?
Well, because in my good friend Tasha, who I do these Go Set a Watchman podcasts with me, she said on Twitter she didn't quite understand what was going on here. So we heard every time, even in this episode, that magic can't cure madness. But we see in this specific episode that he enchants the mouse that he puts in her mouth to take all of her madness. It's a vessel for her madness. So maybe that's how you cure it. Who's to say he could have put the mouse in her mouth, got all her madness into the mouse, and then taken the mouse out and left her as a sane human being?
But that's not what she wanted. She wanted to be a cat, and he gave her wish.
When he said, do you want to, you know, I'll give you what you want, she was like, eh, that's a yes to you?
It is to me, because, and that's why I say that I think it's that the screenwriter went over and above to make him repeat that so we understand, oh, yes, she wanted to be a cat. He says, thank you, madam. I hope she's happy. Right?
He gets rid of her, and then, okay, the mouse is left behind. It's become a vessel for her craziness, and he puts it in his own mouth. Yuck! Oh.
Yeah, no.
This is one guy who likes his Italian food al fresco.
Well, it's not because it's a rat. It's because it was in her mouth already. I mean, that's... Hey, come on.
Way to dismiss Delgado, Catfish.
He learns when he puts the mouse in his mouth.
Mouth in his mouth.
That's too much.
Yeah, that
is too much.
Much
crazy.
It is too much. We cut back to Hanover Square, and Mr. Norrell still can't find him. And Mr. Norrell, are you at all getting on Team Norrell? Because he's like, I failed him. I didn't make him see. I didn't teach him the important lessons.
Hashtag Team Strange.
But come on, Mr. Norrell is coming around. You don't want to give him any credit?
No. Coming around? What do you mean is he coming around? You know, just to say, gee, even as far as he goes in this episode, this is my fault. Okay, but are you going to do anything to fix it?
Yeah, no? He's going to pack up and get the F out of Dodge.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so...
I got a great idea. Let's leave.
Now I know why you're Team Norrell.
All right, now Childermas is reminding him, he's like, you know, when we first moved to London all those years ago, remember how there was that street magician who had all those crazy prophecies? And Mr. Norrell is unwilling to put two and two together, isn't he, Catfish? But Childermas...
I don't think he wants to... Well, he doesn't want to be reminded of the time that he peed his pants.
Oh, okay. So... Childermas is like, I went and saw him, and there were ravens on my cards in Marseille. There are ravens on my cards again. And he shows Mr. Norrell the infamous Black Tower card. And sure enough, it's the mark of the raven on it. Oh, snap. Mm-hmm. And everybody pause. And okay, boy, I meant to mention this at the beginning of the episode. Mm-hmm. Listeners, if you haven't read the books, if you don't know what's coming, your homework this week is to go watch those first couple of episodes. Watch the whole series, because this series has been foreshadowing so much. We remember in the second episode, the pole house was decorated with pictures of Venice. Arabella said she always wanted to visit Venice. Now we're here.
Right.
This card, if you look at this card of the Black Tower, and yes, now it has the Raven's mark on it. But if you look at the picture, it's people tumbling out of the tower. And do you remember when Lady Pole made her tapestry? There were people tumbling out of a tower in her tapestry.
Oh.
Uh-oh. Yeah, so go watch that first episode again. Listen to those prophecies, people. Everything's
or read
right
them
there.
Because you're going to have right. to put the subtitles on.
Right, exactly right. It is all coming. Mr. Neural sees that, and he it's not the end of the episode, but he gets to do one of the classic, oh no, faces.
Oh yeah, that is right.
Catfish, you have recently been on a lot of auditions. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to say some of the shows you've booked. I've been on a lot of auditions. Have you ever been in auditions where they say, show us your oh no face? Show us your, oh crap, Jonathan Strange is unleashing black magic.
They haven't put it exactly like that.
No.
But yes, I have.
Oh, you have? Okay. I have not been to
you know,
any auditions like that.
There's a lot of, there's a quite a variety when you go into a commercial audition, anywhere from having a lots of dialogue to
yeah, I've been on
telling
commercial,
a story. What'd you do this last weekend?
I've been on commercial auditions where it's all just reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, this happened, react. But I've not been on a commercial audition where it's like, this lemon pledge has left a stain. Let's see your oh no face. If the next one I go on, I'm going to think of Mr. Neural because he's got it down.
Okay. Yeah, show me your Neural face. Well, I mean, what people don't know, because they can't see the podcast, because we don't video stream it live.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll Periscope or Meerkat it next time.
Is your eye work is legendary
right,
in auditions.
That is true. All right, so back in Venice, we have a close-up of this mouse. And Jonathan Strange, he's like, that whole mouse was a bit too strong, as you pointed out. I'm just
now. He's got a tricky thing to do here, right?
You
got to
get the essence, the craziness of the mouse. You want to be crazy enough to see the fairy,
but not crazy enough to be able to do the spell to see the fairy,
right? And to be totally schnookered by the fairy. You know, you've got to. You don't want to
right.
Give
That's
away
the other
the farm.
Thing he doesn't want to be right because he said that clearly. So it is a very delicate dance that he's attempting.
How many teaspoons of Mad Mouse do you put in your tea to get crazy catfish?
Well, again, I think you just start off with as little as you can.
Right. This is a powerful section of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first time I saw this, I was like, oh, hell yes, it is so on. Even in the earlier scene where he still couldn't see the gentleman with Thistledown here, you could see on the actor Mark Warren's face that Thistledown was getting really PO'd about constantly getting called. He was really getting
showing
mad.
Up here, yeah.
So now Jonathan, he has just had one teaspoon he mixed into his drink of the mouse madness, and he starts doing it. And this actor,
he's like, I'm just the right amount of nuts.
Right. He gives some great, when he's lighting the candle and you hear the creaking sound, he gives these great insane smiles like, I am nutty, nutty nuts. Hey, Miss Delgado, I'm your buddy now. And Thistledown is immediately there. And there he's
pissed off again. He's like, what
is not happening?
Oh, God. This jackhole keeps calling me.
Oh, and then so perfect. It's
great.
Like, just perfect.
What's great is that Strange says something to him and then doesn't
realize. Not even
thinking
about it. Yeah, you got a snuff. But I was slightly worried. It's like, ooh, the fairy could have used this as a bargain, you know. Here's your snuff, now I own you.
Right, right. Well, that's why I think Strange recovers when he says, Have I asked you anything?
He goes, and then, when did I ask you this for stuff? And he said, just now. And Strange is immediately, he's not completely Coco. You know, Coco for Cuckoo Puffs here.
Right.
He's like, okay, no, forget that. I don't need any snuff. No snuff. Mm-hmm. Don't trouble yourself for that. Oh, but then were you upset? Were you at all afraid that mm-hmm. Strange immediately goes into, hey, let's be partners?
Well, yes, absolutely. Absolutely, because I thought the guy would just snooker him in. Yeah. And his what's also sad is to see here
yeah.
I mean, Strange has no idea because Norrell didn't prepare him.
Right.
See his excitement. He's like, finally, we brought this magic back, and this is going to be amazing, powerful magic we'll bring back. Yeah. You and me will be
he's
together.
Like, flatters. Flatter, flatter, flatter.
Yeah, no, I know. And the man with thistledown hair refuses to be flattered.
Right. But the gentleman with thistledown hair, he's talking about, yes, my magical sensibilities are quite tremendous. But he says that, and then you see that his magical capabilities aren't really that great because he thinks that he's being seen because Jonathan Strange has a magical object like a ring of disenchantment or an urn of visibility.
Exactly. I didn't figure it out until, like, show me the object until the whole thing with the object was done. Then I realized, oh, it's because he thinks that Strange found something.
Right, and he wants to grab it and use the infamous five-finger discount, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
We've seen him take stuff before, and he wants to take it again. He can't understand it. And he starts, Catfish, you are coughing up a storm. What in the world is going on?
I'm sick. I'm struggling through here.
All right. So, Strange, he's like, Strange can't understand what's going on, because he just met the gentleman with thistledown here. He doesn't understand the backstory they have together. So he's like, okay, I understand if you don't want to part with me yet. Take some time to think about it. I'll take some time, and then we'll get together.
This is very smart, too.
Yes, so smart.
Super smart that Strange does. It's like, he's not going to make the deal now.
No.
He's got the introduction,
right?
And he says, okay, we'll talk about this later, blows it out, and then he's super excited. Of course he is.
Yes, he's happy, happy, happy. Oh, if he only knew. At Staircross Hall, our boy Vinculus, he's still singing his songs about the nameless slave. I'll take care of you. I'll set you free. You can set me free. I'll set you free.
Right, and Steven's like, not hearing anything, not hearing anything. I hear nothing.
I want you to watch what the actor who plays Steven does in this scene where he keeps spinning his spoon and not doing anything, like he wants to be draw light.
Now, what's nice here is then we see the man with the thistle down
here. He is upset, Catfish.
He hates him, and he hates Strange, and he's like, how dare he think he's going to make a deal with me? I mean, I would be like, he's going to make a deal with me and I'm going to get the better of him. But no, the man with this is on here is P.O.
He is upset. He's done, magician. I took his wife and he thinks he's so great. I'll make a deal with him and it'll bring a world of trouble on his head.
Meanwhile, this is what's going
on. Kill him, Steven.
This is what's going on in Honeyfoot's head. Food. Now, for a second, I thought Segundus was catching some wind of this.
No, he didn't. But then look like it.
But
no.
At first, I thought he was, because he kind of stopped. He wasn't enjoying his food as much as Honeyfoot was. But then it turned out, no, he's not catching a bit of this. So even though he's kind of magical and has found something, has sent something on Steven and Lady Pole.
Yeah.
He cannot sense the
fairy. And poor Steven, I don't want to say this is his breaking point, but he just kind of snaps. He's like, gentlemen, if you'll excuse me, I need a cart. In some food. If it's okay, I'm going to leave back to London. And did you know what Stephen had in mind? That Stephen, this is his breaking point. He's got to find a way to get rid of the gentleman with thistle down here.
I didn't, simply because I thought, because of the high staff to patient ratio, that it would be a little bit more difficult to get Vinculus out of there than it appeared to be. So for that, Steven gets my second nomination.
Oh, Catfish, you are nominating people left and right.
He got Vinculus out of that locked cage, and there's plenty of people around to see him, but he did not.
Right. Well, he's like, okay, I need a cart. Mm-hmm. Segundus, you go do that. I need some food. Honeyfoot, you go do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just hold the keys as you guys. I'll hold the keys to the cell while you guys go do that. And we follow
them. You guys go pick some flour or something.
And so we follow them, and boy, Vinculus, this is a great road show. Road movie, road trip, Vinculus and Steven. Let's have some fun.
This is a strange pairing.
It really is. Pardon the pun. And so Steven's like, hey, I told the magicians their fortune, and now I've told you, my work is almost done. I just got to meet Maitri. And of course, the only way I know he says that is we turned on the closed captioning. Let's be honest.
I have begged you to by this point.
You were begging. I was like, come on. The closed captioning, it can be distracting. But this episode's so good, it just rises above it. And so Vinculus, he wants to meet this tree.
Again, he's telling him, this is the second time he's reassuring Steven, you get me here.
Right.
And you're going to get broken out of what's going on.
Right. But he doesn't explain how he'll do it.
He doesn't, and So let's talk about what happened when we get to that point in the episode.
Well, they keep cutting back and forth. Jonathan, he knows he can have the fairy, so he grabs old Flora Greysteel. He's like, can I borrow your daughter? The doctor's like, eh.
He says she's the right size and shape.
Oh, that's my sure. That's my normal pickup line.
I'm not sure that's what you'd say to a father. She's the right size and shape.
And do you see who is... reached Venice and who is spying this little exchange catfish?
I do. It is our fop Drawlight, who, while still comporting himself well...
Oh, he misses his wig.
He doesn't have his wig, and he can't afford a decent shave.
Yes, but he has his magical spoon. How did he get so quickly to Venice? The magical spoon. And Drawlight is my first nominee for Magician of the Week.
Oh, because of the spoon. You know, I know that once I saw Drawlight that you wouldn't be able to help nominating him for something because...
Now, you know, no. Did you notice, Catfish, and were you able to tell that Strange is using Flora because he wants to get a dress for his wife when he brings her back?
I didn't figure it out until after he got the right dress, and he's like, okay, see you later.
Right.
I thought that he had something else in mind, and I don't know exactly what it was, but then I realized.
Oh, well, Flora loves these double Bs, these triple Bs, because once he's telling her the story about, you know, I'm going to bring magic back, I'm going to open all the doors, I'm going to teach all the pupils, teach all the women, all the poor folk, anybody wants to learn magic, I will do it, I will restore it. As soon as he's telling her all this stuff, she is getting turned on, and she goes, take me dancing. She is turned on, Catfish. And that's when Jonathan realizes, okay, clingy.
Well, you know, in the book, Lloyd Byron pulled him aside and said, yeah, watch out.
Hey, now, I'm not sure she actually had a relationship with Lord Byron.
She's good for a tumble.
Hey, now, terrible. Terrible. Now, her father has gotten an English paper there in Venice, and he finds out that Jonathan is a fugitive. Not with my daughter!
Yeah, he doesn't seem fully outraged.
Well, he doesn't know what type of fugitive is. He doesn't know it's for questioning
I would
wife.
Assume, right, but for fugitive, right. But even in any case, even if it wasn't for the wife thing...
No, it wasn't for the wife. Jonathan, after he gets the dress, he goes and gets some flour. And who it is, Drawlight with his spoon dangling... Dandy spoon.
If I was him, I would have said, look, just leave me in this prison. I'll be able to find out just as much here, and it won't put me in any danger.
Oh, I don't know. I think I would. Yeah, I disagree, Catfish.
Okay.
In fact, the next time I'm in the club, I'm going to be rocking a spoon. You know, see if that works for
Rock
all the
it.
Ladies.
That's like peacocking.
Right, exactly.
So what do you do with the spoon? I'm just lighting it up over here.
All right. So Jonathan, he's so excited. This is it. And even though the whole episode is a 10, this scene might go to 11.
Oh, man.
It is so
It is amazing.
Good.
This is the amazing
He's got the
scene.
Flowers out. He's got the dress out. He is ready. And this time, he's going to make sure he's completely able. He's going to take, I think, 2 teaspoons of this delicious...
Well, 2 drops, really,
of this
is what
delicious mouse madness. And once he drinks it, it is time to light a candle and get busy.
Let's do this thing.
And this was a bit... creepy, because as soon as he lights the candle, Thistledown is there. He's not waiting. He is ready to get it on. And you can tell he's going to plan, and he's going to see what he can do, what he can tempt Jonathan Strange with, so he can ruin him and kill him. I hate the magician.
Right, and of course, having seen the way Norrell dealt with him, who presumably should have been smarter, and seeing Strange here, you cannot imagine... that Strange is going to do well in this dealing with him. But he's making it very precise.
Oh, he
You have to give me exactly something. Now, the only thing that Strange doesn't say, and I would have been very clear about this.
Is what is the token?
What do I have to give you? Before we need to do that, but...
Well, Strange is single-minded. He's like, I want you to bring my wife back
from
the
dead. Right, he's thinking
dead.
No matter what. But again, if you are like walking on wood legs and you can't dance with her... because that's what he changed it, you two. That's no good.
Now, Catfish, don't you wish Jonathan could have asked the question...
correctly.
Correctly, yes. And the Thistledown here, he is totally using grammatical truth to get around this bullshit. He's like, I can't bring her back from the dead.
Right. I was waiting for him to say, because she's not dead.
Well, he's not going to say that. He's evil.
Right, but if he brings her back... then he owns Jonathan Strange. He can still do whatever. But I didn't think that would happen, but I thought that would be cool if he said that.
Oh, I don't know. And Jonathan, he's angry. He's like, listen, I've heard there's magic in fairy that can bring people back.
And I will say this. The man with the thistle down hair makes very good points, right? Number one, okay, where's her body? Okay, not here. Bad. Two, how long has she been dead? Well, it's been a while, so not good. You can imagine that if he wasn't fooling him, these are good answers.
But he is totally fooling him. He is, once again, he's playing around with language.
Right, but that's what I mean. It's still smart. It sounds as if it's reasonable.
I'm not down with it.
But then this is where becomes heartbreaking for me. This scene, I did not think after everything that had gone on between all these people, I did not feel this bad for the character when Moss Oak A, quote unquote, died originally, and he had that grief.
Oh,
like
I
this.
Did. I did.
No, but here he's at his complete wit's end, and it's just beautifully played. Really beautifully played.
He wanders her so bad. That's his whole life has been about her.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Thistledown, he doesn't care. In fact, he wants to scheme. He doesn't understand emotions, human emotions. He doesn't understand.
Well, I don't know about that. He does. You know, Steven says it later on, and I believe it's true that he.
What's that?
That he full on hates.
Oh well, yeah,
That's a human emotion. I think he doesn't have any of the what we would call the good human emotions, but he has all the bad ones: avarice, greed, hate, jealousy.
Yeah, but he also. He makes a big verbal faux pas, the gentleman with thistle down here.
Man, let me tell you something. When that happened,
it
I was just
so
like,
good.
Oh, there it is. So why don't we just a little play act here.
All right, let's
and
play
just,
act.
And we'll just do the lines
and
is.
You be Jonathan Strange, and I'll be the magician.
Okay, and I might say some things. No, okay, go ahead.
There must be something else you desire. A kingdom of your own. A beautiful new companion.
I don't understand. There was a woman in England, Lady Pole.
Lady Pole was a different matter entirely.
Bam!
What?
And Strange is like, what?
The Princess Pauline Borghese, she's a fine woman. I could have her here in the blink of an eye.
But see, you're doing that like he thinks he made a mistake, and I don't think he thinks he made a mistake.
Oh, I do.
I don't think he cares.
I do. I do, because as soon as Jonathan, well, he doesn't maybe realize it then, but when Jonathan says, who was the last English magician you dealt with? And he's like, not important.
Look, that is fairy magician confidentiality.
Right. These matters are not important. And Jonathan is like, who was the last English magician you dealt with?
Yes, this is an amazing turn here.
Good. What token did he give me? I didn't think the gentleman with thistle down hair could do this. Jonathan says, bring me the token that you got from dealing with the last English magician.
Right.
And Thistledown doesn't immediately do it, doesn't have to immediately do it. He's like, no, it's an unimportant thing. You don't want it. It's not, you know, who cares? And Jonathan sticks
to his
gun.
But he insists upon it.
Oh,
he insists upon it.
Right.
He says, bring it to me. Bring me what you gained from your last dealings with an English magician.
No, it is utterly worthless.
A binding agreement, I think you said? Bring it to me.
Oh, and then
he blows out the candle.
Oh, so good.
Oh, so good.
Thistledown.
Yes, you didn't think that Thistledown would have to bring it, but then... And of course, there's a nice turn here because Jonathan Strange is just...
Who
just
was crying a minute
crushed,
ago. Now he's
crushed and angry. Right? He's
angry.
Like, wait, there's something going on here that Norrell didn't tell me.
Right, he is so mad. He planned all this stuff. The flowers he planned. He throws them down. The dress he bought. He throws it down, and that's when it appears.
Boom!
The little box.
Boom!
Featuring Lady Pole's figures.
Digits. Here's some information about Lady Pole. Here's a digit.
Oh, this is so good. Mm-hmm. This is so great. And Jonathan, talk about a wide range of emotion he's gone through
in this last 10 minutes. Holy cow.
And he's like, I'm going to down all the rat craziness. He drinks the drink, and now he's going to drink all the liquid.
Now, why do you
think
that he's doing this?
I think he wants to see everything. He wants to...
He thinks he needs to be completely crazy to see it all.
I do. And he goes to this finger, this enchanted Lady Pole finger. He's like, where did you come from? Show me. And that's where he is. The finger somehow leads him in to the mirror. It is bringing him to Lost Hope Podcast. I love this shot of him exiting the mirror.
This was so exciting. I'm like, no way. Is he going to, again, having totally forgotten the book, I'm like, oh my God, is he gonna bump into Belle? I was so worried that it was gonna be one of those things where he misses her.
Oh no.
I know. I was like, oh my God, he's got to see Belle.
He
ends up seeing all of his old friends here.
Right, hey, it's a class reunion.
Some new ones.
It's a class reunion, and he gets pulled into Lost Hope, and there's dancing. And he smiles. What's interesting...
And you know why?
Why?
Because you can't stop the dance.
No, you can't. He smiles, Catfish. You notice as he walks in, because he's come into the other lands, the fairy lands. And
right, so for a moment, he kind of forgets what he's been looking for, and because he's like, this is so amazing.
Uh-oh.
And then...
And Stephen has...
see Stephen, then he's like, wait, what? WTF, Stephen?
Stephen is like, I hope I'm wearing my brown trousers.
And he gives him a little update here,
right,
a little warning.
He's like, what are you doing here? Don't you know the magician hates you?
It would be like this. You know what, Strange? This is the worst place you could be.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And then Steven gets pulled away from a dancer, and he runs into old friend number two, Lady Pole.
Lady Pole, who thinks, oh my God, yes, thank God you're here to save us. Once again, another kind of bell goes off in Jonathan Strange's crazy rat
so
brain right now.
Good. But Lady Pole and Stephen, somehow they are able to keep their wits in
Lost Hope. It's interesting. It's interesting
but
that they
Arabella,
sort of can, but Arabella has been enchanted.
She has.
And Strange does use that word.
Right.
Enchanted.
He does, yeah.
So it's clear that
she doesn't even recognize him in Lost Hope, Catfish. This is the love of her life, her
exactly,
husband.
Exactly, exactly. It is the love of her life and the love of his life.
And all he thinks is, hey, she thinks is, hey, do you want to dance?
Right. And she doesn't even mind that he's pawing her inappropriately for a stranger. Because you know what? When you have the dance going, all touches are good touches.
Oh, good touch. But guess who doesn't like this too much? Oh, we're going to have a pissed off off.
Well, here's the problem.
What?
Who scheduled all the invites? And Strange was not on the list. Stephen was supposed to be the bouncer.
Right. Man with thistle down hair is like, these people weren't. He didn't get the evite. And he sends all the fairies
sends the trap people away.
And this is when it is on. And I love this line. Give me back my wife. I just love the way he delivers it. He is angry, but Thistledown, he's going to have none of this, Catfish.
Right, He's like, that's two things.
Right. You only get one thing, bitch. And now I gave you one thing that you wanted. Now I'm going to give you something that I want. And oh, snap, these leaves. The tree didn't really have leaves, but he brings this darkness down. Stephen, God love him. He's like, stop, don't do it. Because Stephen maybe saw that Jonathan Strange is his last choice.
Sure, he did.
Oh, and it's so good. And even Thistledown, we realize he's not all powerful. He collapses, but he's happy. He's a happy, collapsed man.
He is.
He goes,
you know what? For the first time in a long time, he's going to get a good night's sleep.
Right. He's like, Stephen, I've dealt him such a blow. Thank you. Stephen always gets thanks. Our plan worked great, Stephen.
Stephen's like, okay, fine.
And so this is right in the middle of the episode. How in the world can they top this? You know what you're thinking?
I think they're going to.
They keep going. Stephen has apparently fallen asleep as he was taken to Lost Hope. And Stephen, once again, everybody's reaching their breaking point. Stephen is reaching his. He's like, Vinculus, I said if you set you free, you'd set me free. What's going on? You've done nothing,
Where's the
buddy.
Deal?
Where's this book? You keep talking about this book. Let's see it. And this is when it becomes a striptease.
Here's the Raven's book.
Now, do you think Stephen put a hay penny in... Do you think he put a penny in Vinculus's G-string, Catfish?
Wow. I know,
this is table service, bottle service.
There's a new movie coming out called Mad Mike.
Right, exactly.
And that's the crazy stripper Vinculus.
Right, oh my goodness. Instead of Magic Mike, it's Mad Mike.
So we hear this crazy-ass story.
Right, let me read it to you. Vinculus says...
Well, give me the bell.
All right, you ready? Footnote. Yeah. My rotten, no-good bastard father was stupidly entrusted to deliver the Book of the Raven King to a man in the Derbyshire hills, the last man in England who could read the king's letters. Unfortunately, en route, he got himself embroiled in a drinking competition with a blacksmith in Sheffield. And when challenged, my father proceeded to eat the book. 4 years later, I was born, with it written all over my infant body. So this is pretty much Sheffield Inc. You know, we got Miami Inc., we got L.A. Inc. Now we're enjoying Sheffield Inc. here on the show. Do you like the sleeves?
Yeah, he's got full sleeves.
Right.
I was really surprised about it. When you think about it, it's got to be like, well, when he's a baby, he wouldn't be able to even read it at all. And also, he would have to have hired some people to read some of it to him, right?
Like, well, the stuff on the back? Well, if nobody can read the Raven King's writings, who would he hire? You know, this...
Oh, that's written in Raven King language?
Yeah, that's not in English. Those aren't human letters. No, come
on. Oh, wow, okay.
That's why...
So he's... Basically, he has... Because it was written on him and he was born with it, he sort of has all that knowledge in his head. He knows the whole thing.
He knows the prophecies, yeah. And this is a great scene for Team Stephen, which you're always so tough on, Catfish.
Oh, yeah?
They have this thing about how they both have their skin marks them.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen's like, look at my skin. It means people can come up and punch me and slap me and, you know, not worry about it.
Yeah,
I can learn all these languages, and I'll be nothing more than a curiosity. Stephen hasn't had a fair life. Give Stephen some props.
Right, but what he leaves unsaid, which is understood, is, which is why I totally sold out Lady Pole, because some dude promised to make me king, and I want to be king to lord it on everybody else.
Lady Pole had already been turned before Stephen got involved.
Sold her out.
Catfish, you are... Not on Team Stephen. That is tough.
No.
Vinculus ends that scene by saying, hey, you want to be free? I want to be free. Let's go find this tree I've got a date with.
Oh, and that is my third nomination for Magician of the Week.
The tree?
No. It's Vinculus.
How so?
Because he took off his hat, and it turns out he made the top of his hair disappear there on the top of his head.
You think he's taking the strange medicine from Venice? He's like... You know, the Cinnamon Challenge. He's been taking the Cinnamon Challenge all this time.
Who
the Ginger
to
Challenge, because he's got red head. Back at Hanover Square, my boy Lascelles, he's here. He's like, Drawlight has found him. He's found him. We know where. See, this is Catfish. This is the way I read this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Lascelles come in. He says, Drawlight has found him. He's in Venice. And then...
See, and but
Mr.
by the way,
Norrell,
he does say she's a disgraced young person. So even though you're giving me a hard time for saying she's disgraced.
That's if you think Drawlight got stuff right. Drawlight also says that Jonathan Strange and Flora Greysteele are a couple, an item.
Okay, you may misinterpret that because they're hanging out, but you don't misinterpret when someone said, you know, she chased after Lord Byron and then
came
back.
That's just a rumor.
Look, Lord Byron, even back in the day, was known for being hedonistic. He was very open about it. Anybody who went and joined with Lord Byron, that's a scandal. I'm just laying it out for you.
I'm on Team Lord Byron. Let's go.
I know, but look, believe me, that's why I don't know why you're blasting it.
Flora's honor. I'm also on Team Flora, trying to keep her thing good. Now, Lascelles reads Drawlight's note, which also says that Strange is trying to get a fairy to come back and use the magic against Mr. Durrell. So Mr. Nurl heard that Strange is in Venice. He goes
to his ball. To use it, but he said to confound him. In other words, to say, look, there can be fairies.
Yeah, exactly right. So anyway, Nurl looks in his bowl, and I think Nurl is just seeing Venice. I think Nurl is seeing the Black Tower in Venice. I think Strange still doesn't want to be seen. I think it's, you know, that's what he's seeing. And Nurl,
right, because he knows he's in Venice. He still can't see him.
Right. So Nurl, we don't see what he sees in the bowl. But we know it's trouble because he's like, I got to go home. This has been fun, guys,
but
it's time to leave.
Well.
I got to leave London. Send my books after me. Bye, guys.
Right? I've got to go to my books. I'm going to need every single book.
Oh, my God. All my books. So Childermas and Lascelles, they go over there and they look at the bowl. And Lascelles is like, is that Venice? Oh, snap. Uh-oh.
And once again,
give Norrell some credit. He says, this is all my doing. It's all my doing.
Yes, I'll give a guy credit for saying it's his fault not explaining it or apologizing.
You know,
or trying to fix it.
Hindsight is 20/20, Catfish. Give Mr. Neural some credit for having perfect vision at the end.
Oh, my God.
And so we go back to Venice, and Flora, she realizes something's up. She goes to the window. Daddy's like, stranger's gone mad. Let's pack our bags and get... Oh, crap.
They say he's cursed the city. So that's interesting. At this point, we didn't know. We just saw... Strange disappear, so we don't know what's going on with him.
Right.
So then when we see this big kind of black tornado, it's like, what is going on? Now, the interesting thing is when we first see him,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he starts to explain some stuff, but basically he seems no more worse off than he was before, except for now obviously he'd be worse because he knows that his wife is alive somewhere and he can't get to her. So basically, to torment him, all you need to do is keep him away from his wife. That's the worst thing.
But hold on. It's not just that he's in his wife. He's trapped in the way he describes it in mm-hmm. eternal night. Oh, not fun.
Well, I would say it's tough, still tougher for as far as the physical part of it and the emotional part of just being trapped.
Okay.
It's worse for Lady Pole. But the emotional part of being estranged from his wife, that's worse, I think, for him.
All right. So Flora, she likes the triple B's, Catfish. She goes into the internal darkness. She's not afraid.
Bring it on. Yeah.
Were you afraid for her? Did you remember this part at Catfish?
No, not at all. I was afraid for her because I thought it was some sort of crazy vortex. That's what it seems like.
Right.
And instead, it's just darkness. In other words, it didn't seem... It's not just like it's dark. It's like we're going to see Toto fly by with Auntie M.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that it's so calm actually in there.
So Jonathan, he is not so calm. He realizes his wife is alive.
He says some really cool... Everything he says here is probably like what's going to be for when our listeners, when they re-listen to the prophecies from the first episode, where it's like everything sounds like gibberish, but everything absolutely makes sense.
Yeah, and he has a great line that I want to give to you, Catfish.
Mm-hmm.
He says, Noral was right. He lied, and yet he told the truth. And that pretty much sums up Mr. Noral in a nutshell, mm-hmm. right?
Noral Absolutely.
Was right. Don't mess with these freaking beings from a different plane. But he was telling the truth, yet he lied. If he hadn't lied, one episode miniseries. I mean, come on.
Exactly.
And Jonathan, he's smart. He's like, Stephen and the fairy, they spy on me. If they see you, you're going to be in trouble, Flora. Get the F out of D.
Yeah, exactly.
And the D doesn't stand for Doge's Palace, which was a lovely place that I visited in Venice.
Damn you. D stands for damn you for going and not inviting me.
You were out shopping. You were buying presents.
I have to bring home presents for everybody. You just bring home tails.
All right. So now Catfish, Jonathan, Flora's like, can't I help? I want to help. And he goes, I'll tell you how, but not now. Get out of here. Run. Dr. Graysteel comes in. He's got a gun. He's like, get my daughter away from... Not with my daughter.
No.
Dr. Graysteel is
uh-huh.
my second nominee for Magician of the Week because this is like 1816, and yet he's reenacting the plot of the movie Taken. He's going to get his daughter.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Oh, sure. Okay, one thing.
You've met the two characters.
Sure.
Who would you... She's this woman says to him, is there anything I can do for you?
Yeah.
Now...
Uh-oh.
Would...
I'm worried about whatever your question's going to be.
No. It's a true question.
Sure.
It's a true question.
All right.
So, knowing that she is smart and resourceful
and
trustworthy...
Yeah.
Why would you say, no, you just get out of here... And then say, oh, yeah, I'm going to trust Drawlight to do these three things.
Well, very important note. He did say something like, there may be something you can do. I'll let you know.
Not even I'll let you know, but you'll know when the time comes.
Right, exactly right. Now, but hold on. Look at Drawlight. Drawlight, despite the frigging internal darkness, having this black tower over Venice.
Mm-hmm.
Draw light, he's still doing the job. He comes up to me, he's like, hey, everybody, what's going on? I've heard that
give
strange,
me the scoop. What's right, the hubbub? What's
I
the
heard
hubbub?
Strange people turned people to glass and threw stones at him. Young lady, you're his special friend. Whoa, and look at, you liked this thing that Dr. Graysteel did, didn't you, catfish?
Yeah, he says, do you want to get a shot? He says, no. And then this is a great, I would like to use this line on people.
What do you mean? Drawlight is desperately trying.
Right.
And he's like, do you wish to be shot? Drawlight's like, no.
Then behave differently.
Oh, snap, Dr. Graysteel.
That is my line of the week. Then behave differently.
Right. Now, did you recognize, here's another footnote, did you recognize the actor playing Dr. Graysteel? You've seen him on a show we've podcast about.
Oh, no. I haven't been paying that close attention to him.
The actor who plays Dr. Graysteel here mm-hmm. is none other than Clive Revell, who in the first season of Game of Thrones played Great John Umber, one of the northern supporters of Robb Stark, the king in the north. And remember when we first met his character on Game of Thrones, he was like, I want to lead the vanguard. Listen to me, boy. I want to lead the vanguard. You piss grass. Da, da, da. You're so green, you piss grass. Suddenly, Robb Stark's, this is a spoiler alert for this one little bit in season one of Game of Thrones, Robb Stark's direwolf, remember, jumps over the table, and what ends up happening? His character ends up missing some digits, just like Lady Bull.
Wow.
Yeah, so missing digits, common thread, people listen to both our podcasts.
Right, absolutely.
All right, so Draw Light, even he isn't getting brave when he sees all the ravens and crows.
No,
going
he's telling himself, run away, run away, run away.
All right, Norrell is packing up, he's leaving. He's still not the perfect guy. It's not easy to be on Team Norrell because he's like, maybe this is good. Because he's trapped, Strange won't be able to perform any magic. And Lascelles...
Let me just stop you here for a second.
Stop.
So... Do you, because I feel like even though I'm Team Strange and not Team Norrell, that I think that I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that you may not be giving him.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't think that, part of me believes that Norrell is going to go to all his books to try and figure out how to stop this. Do you think of that or do you think he's just running away?
I would say what the TV show shows us so far is later losers. That is my. That's how I exit most places.
But he's again, and I'm maybe just endowing him with this because I'm thinking, you know, it seems to me like this is not going to be a one-time thing. Like,
no,
it seems like this has kind of invaded our world. So he's going to have to do something about it.
Right. Well, so he'll need all his books for sure.
So in other words, you're still more Team Norrell because you think he's just a scaredy cat running away.
No. Norrell. He's made two mistakes.
Oh, my God.
They've both been gigantic mistakes. So I'm willing to say that.
Yes, but do you repeat this mistake when you don't?
Right, okay. Throw me a bone, Kevin.
All right, I'll throw you a
now,
mistake
No, I remember
bone.
Last week I joined on Team Lascelles here, and he's like, fairy creatures? How silly. And Team Norrell is like, listen, moron. Have you been paying attention to all the crap I've been saying?
I wish you'd read my book.
All right.
Oh, hello.
You wrote it. Listen, you dumbass Lascelles. Oh, but Lascelles, you know what he still has a problem with? He still has a problem with servants entering. No, because Childermas is out in the hallway, and he hears the tap, tap, tap. Tap, tap, tap.
It's funny
on
too
the
because
mirrors.
I thought it was coming from the stuff in the box, not the mirror, something in the box. I thought someone was scrolling around, and he hears it. And what we found out later that LaSalle does not hear it.
Not at first. No. He can't pick it up anyway.
Right, but later on, people do hear it, so it does get worse.
Right. It gets so strong that even non-magicians can hear it. And Childermas is like, do you think he's thinking, I picked the wrong team? You know how last week he's like, well, if you win, I'll do this. If Norrell wins, I'll do that.
You're going to have to help me when it comes to the end of this episode because it seems to me that there's two different things going on.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't tell which of the two powers that are accumulating is doing what?
Oh, well, yeah.
Okay, so when we get to Vinculus in the tree, let's talk about it, because that's where it happens.
Sure, an important thing is Lascelles is about to break the mirror, and Norrell's like, put that down, you buffoon.
Do you think no mirrors in London anywhere can be broke, or just here in the magic house right now?
I think it's just Norrell's house, don't you? Like, Strange is coming.
Yeah.
Now here we
see. So you think it's strange? You think it's Strange that's coming, even though Strange is being trapped?
Strange.
See, that's what I don't understand.
Strange is sending his messengers, the Ravens. They work for me. He's opening the doors. Remember how he's talking about? I'm opening the doors.
Right, and I understand that, but this is what I don't understand. So what that would mean is something that I never assumed.
Okay.
And that is that the Raven King is in or will be in opposition to the man with the thistle down hair, when somehow it seemed like they were kind of working together, or at least they have kind of the same goal.
Well, yeah, why don't we talk about it when we get to that scene at the end?
Let's do, because I can't figure out who is doing what and to what end,
right?
Especially because Stephen never gets that reprieve that we expected him to get.
Good luck, Steve.
And Vinculus was right about everything up to a certain point. Number one, that Stephen would be free. And number two, that he was hard to kill.
Well, before we do that, Catfish, this is a scene I want to ask you about because I don't think you'll remember from the book.
Okay.
So, you know, Dr. Greysteel is begging with his daughter, let's get out of here. But she has a letter in her hand,
mm-hmm.
and she says, it's a note from Jonathan Strange. And something else that is from Jonathan Strange is she goes up to this thing which is covered.
It's a mirror.
With a bit of a curtain, but it's covered with a curtain. Is that what you think it is? What do you think's on the other side of this thing?
I think that it's a mirror, and so, you know, maybe at some point he's going to try to escape from where he is to the mirror in where she is.
Okay, well, we shall see.
Well, absolutely. I think we won't have long to wait.
Just 1 week, right. And
I don't think we're not going to find out. Let me say that.
Okay,
I think
right.
We are going to find out.
Now, our boy Drawlight, he has packed what little bag he has, and he is trying to get on the what are those boats called? He's trying to get on a gondola and get out of town.
But, and then he hears Strange coming after him. Which is great.
Oh, yeah.
So it seems like Strange is expanding this. This is what I don't understand. Like, Strange just can't get rid of it, but he can expand it, I guess.
Well, the way I took it, and this is from the book, so this is a bit of a book spoiler for all our listeners who don't want to know stuff from the book because they read it, is that this Black Tower follows him. So it's like he could go and chase down Drawlight, and the tower would follow him.
Okay,
and then he
makes sense.
Uses some sort of different spell to call Drawlight to him. Like,
but also it sounded like, to me, it sounded like he was too weak to really go and do something like that.
Yeah, well, it would.
To go on a walkabout. It's draining his life, right? That's what he's saying. It's draining his life.
It is.
Slowly. This is like a Batman villain. It's going to take 1 hour for you to be dipped in that vat of acid. And in the meantime, I've got to go pick up my laundry.
Now, Catfish, this episode keeps jumping around.
Yeah.
So we are taken back to Gordale Scar. And sure enough, the tree that Vinculus has a meeting with is in this place. We're back in episode 4,
okay,
Childermas, after he had shot, they were pulling the bullet out of him. He had a vision of himself being here at this tree.
Ah, okay, and it's not him though. It's Vinculus and Stephen.
Right,
and Vinculus is still saying all kinds of stuff. We're going to meet somebody here. I didn't know whether we'd meet the Raven King. I didn't know who we were going to meet here.
Right, and Stephen, you know, once again, you don't feel like you can like Stephen. But Stephen is just tearing up. He's begging. He's like, this is going to be it. I'm finally going to be free.
And I don't care about Lady Pole. She can do whatever.
All right. Back at Hanover Square, we're jumping around. Lord Liverpool and Sir Walter Pole have shown up. And they're like, listen, leaving so fast, are you?
Hey, thanks a lot.
Listen, you always want the government to commission you? Well, here's a commission. Stop your pupil from going nuts.
And
jerk.
What does Norrell do? Once again, he whines.
Oh,
why didn't you listen to me?
I told you so.
You know what? Strange caused all this. It had nothing to do with me making that whoops.
And now everybody in the room, including Lord Liverpool and Sir Walter Pole, can hear the tap, tap, taps, tap,
it's
tap,
scratching.
Tap. they're like, what does it mean? And even Lascelles, he's finally wising up. They're like, listen, Norrell, you're the only magician in England. You're our magician. We will not disregard your advice again.
We'll do the stupid magic court.
Right. Just stop him. And Norrell, he's finally like, yeah, I'm not sure I can do this day. In Venice, Drawlight has been dragged into the Black Tower. And he Drawlight, even in such an intense, such crazy stuff, he can get you some laughs here, Captain.
He's got his go-to suck-up toadying.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It served him well for so long. You can't expect him to just abandon it.
Right. So he sees this guy. He sees this guy kind of laying on the stairs, and he goes up to him. He tries speaking Italian. And suddenly, what is it? Abracadabra. Strange is scared, poor draw, like catfish. Not cool, Deep Strange.
Yeah. So it turns out he's got, and again, I shudder when these important responsibilities are laid at the feet of Christopher Drawlight. But
Drawlight, hey, he's like, listen, I've always been your friend. They made me do it. Oh, my God, don't you love it? You love it? He's throwing them under the bus. That's so great. And
Strange says, yeah, I'm mad. And he's like, no, you're not mad. No,
yeah,
come
guy.
On.
Come on,
come
buddy.
On. Maybe a little upset.
Right, what's the big deal? Right. So Strange is like, I brought you here, Drawlight, to help me with something. Drawlight, he has a real funny line. Oh, great. Good. Yeah.
I was hoping I could be helpful.
We're cutting back and forth back at Gordale Scar. It turns out Vinculus is singing his song about the nameless slave who shall be a king. And who shows up? The gentleman with thistle down here. And he is still PO'd. He spent the whole episode upset.
He's been upset pretty much most of the series, except for when he's able to snatch some ladies away.
Some hot babes. Yeah. Yeah, he likes that. But he tells Steven, can you feel it? All the doors are being shook.
Right, and so that seems to be something that's against...
Who's doing it?
Yeah, who is doing it? Is it Strange
is
doing
it? Is it Strange
it?
Or
is it, the Raven,
is it
King?
The Raven King?
Because it seemed to me...
Do you think it's Honeyfoot?
I would have not thought that Vinculus was waiting for the man with the thistle down hair.
No, you wouldn't think so, no. But the thistle down, he's in such a bitchy mood, he says, where did this little pig person come from? Snap.
Wow, he is super angry. Besides, I mean, you can't call him a pig. Look how skinny he is.
Well, he's not a pig, but Thistledown is about to become the host of What Not to Wear, because he's like, maybe you could, Englishmen in the books, you could sell your book for a new jacket.
And Vinculus is still crazy and says it is John Usglass's book and it tells the fortunes of us all. Now, unfortunately...
Uh-oh, there's some smack talking that's
right.
about to happen.
He says, my fortune is better than yours.
I doubt the truth of that.
Right, and so this whole time, Vinculus has been saying things that were turned out to be true.
Yep.
Right? And so now there seems to be a little bit of a turnabout because he also says, I'm harder to kill than I look.
That's true. Right. And
the Thistledown is PO. The Thistledown is like, I think we, a.k.a. you, Stephen, should kill this dude.
Right. Let's do it. Let's kill him, Stephen. And suddenly a noose appears from the lone branch of the tree.
Mm. It was just not really affect Vinculus. He's like, go ahead. I'm hard to kill.
Are you indeed?
Yeah.
I must confess that it looks to me as if nothing would be easier.
I got to agree. That's probably the first time I've agreed with the man with the pistol down here. Vinculus looks easy to kill.
Do you dance, rogue?
And I think he means dance upon the rope.
Oh, so... Jonathan Strange is laying everything out to Drawlight. He's like, Lady Pole is not mad. It was Mr. Norrell who's to blame. He made a deal with a fairy who has some rights over her. This fairy has enchanted two of England's subjects, his king's subjects, one of whom is my wife. Your first job is to tell that to John Childermass and give him Lady Pole's finger. But he can't do it. He can't do it. Mm-hmm. He must not give it to her before I send the word.
So he's got some sort of master plan here.
He does. He's opening the doors. So it's Jonathan Strange, I think, who's opening the doors. He just said he was.
Right, right.
Your second task is to get a letter to Lady Pole. Ooh, what do you think is in that, Catfish? Can you guess what would be Jonathan Strange would send in a letter to Lady Pole?
I don't know why it would be to Lady Pole. I think it would be to Mr. Pole saying, hey, your wife's not nuts. This is really what's happening to her.
Right.
Maybe it contains a spell for her to get out of her trouble.
Ooh, could a woman who's spending half her life in Lost Hope do magic?
He is saying he's going to open all the doors and everybody will be able to do magic.
All right, yeah, good call.
And I think he means that literally, that like there will be an excess of magic in the air.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody who wants to do magic, who believes that Tinkerbell will still be alive,
I do believe in fairies.
Yeah.
Now, Drawlie, he's like, Jonathan Strange tells him, he's like, do it, or all the magicians in England will ruin you. And he's
right.
like,
and
all
so
magicians
says,
in England, huh?
He
I thought
says,
there was only one, Norrell, because you're here.
There's going to be everybody. People who followed... people who believed they could do magic.
Right.
People who are Norrell, who wanted to be Norrell's pupils.
Childermas,
right.
Segundus, Honeyfoot.
Saying, right. Even those bums of the society.
Hey, now
they can do it all. It's full of magicians.
Right.
And that's what I'm thinking he's saying, that they're magicians and he's going to get into new magic. And I love this funny because he threatens Drawlie so much. He's like, all right, deliver these three messages and I won't harm you. Now leave. And Drawlie's like, that was only two. B, you got to tell me the third, please.
I would have actually just left. Wouldn't you? I would have been like, okay, let me get out of here.
He's threatened him. He's like, please, the third,
and
please.
And another bit of wonderful acting from the actor Bertie Carvel. When he's like, what is the third message? Tell Norrell, I am coming. Oh,
whoa.
Hell yeah. That would be a great cliffhanger for the episode. We see the Ravens.
Now, I thought that's how it would end on,
the
but
Ravens
it didn't end
are
on that.
Going crazy. The Ravens are flying into the mirrors here in Venice, but they're not going to stay in Venice, are they, Catfish?
No, they're going to go on a trip.
Let me tell you something. Hanover Square is suddenly going to become a much harder house to sell.
Right?
You know,
it's going to require far more cleaning.
Right. What is all these raven droppings? These crows.
So then we go back to Mr. Norrell's place, and there's a crack in the mirror, and the both of us thought,
why are you getting so close?
You see a crack in the mirror, you lean away from the mirror, not into the mirror.
And the beak is peeking through, and you knew it.
Shit.
Here it comes.
Here they come.
Oh, and so that could have been a great cliffhanger to the episode.
That would have been a great end to the episode.
But instead we leave, and we go back to the tree. And Steven.
And we look up in the tree, and we see that Vingulus's words... this is the first time we see Vingulus's words did not seem to be true, because apparently he was killed just in the interim. It wasn't tough. It was so easy we didn't even bother showing it.
How much more broken can Steven be? Steven falls to his knees. He's like, he told me he would be free. And you will be free, Steven. It's written on him. It's a very old prophecy.
So this is what Steven, I don't understand.
Steven asks, what else is written on him? What else does it say? Thistledown says, it says, the magicians will fail. Oh, and of course, that was one of the things that Vingulus said back in the very first episode. And let us return to the dance.
Because you can't, what?
You can't, what?
Stop the dance.
Oh, no. It ends where they have disappeared into Lost Hope, and we see Vingulus hanging on the tree with a bunch
and
of ravens
what's
around
what's strange him. Is... I really feel like this was an abrupt end. Like, they should have stayed on this for maybe a couple seconds longer.
A beat or two longer.
Yeah, it seemed like a really super quick end. All right, so let's talk about this.
Sure.
Because I am confused.
All right.
So, Strange has been looking the whole time for this fairy magic, but also interested in the Raven King.
Right.
And it was never clear to me. Those always seem to be kind of bound up in each other because they were bound up in Jonathan Strange's mind.
Sure.
So now we're seeing they're two different forces, you think? I mean, I know it's hard because you remember
the
book.
I don't want to say.
All right.
So just speculate. You speculate. What do you think's happening?
I mean, I always kind of thought you can't talk about the Raven King so much without us seeing the Raven King.
But remember earlier in the episode, Jonathan Strange, when he was talking to Flora about the Raven King, he said, some say the Raven King is more than one person. He's all magicians who follow, you know, his teachings.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, I've come to believe really that, I mean, this hasn't been set up the way Game of Thrones has with the
Winter
the
is coming,
the White Walkers kind of thing.
Okay.
So it's not like I feel like I need to see the Raven King. You know, I won't feel like upset if I don't see the Raven King or if it turns out that the Raven King is just a bunch of people.
Yeah.
But I'm still confused about the Raven King versus the fairies.
All right. Catfish, the big thing is you are confused. That's nothing new
always
here
great.
On the podcast. All right. Anything else you want to say on this 10 out of 10, this awesome, dramatic, tense-filled, even some laughs, everything you would want episode of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell?
It was amazing. It did have everything in it. And I can't wait to see how it's going to end. I can't imagine it's going to end well.
Well, we will have to see. Mm-hmm. Listeners, when you tweeted us, when you enter our contest, when you tweet
at... How do they tweet at you?
They tweet at me, at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim, at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
Wow, or they can hit me up at CJGman67.
Yeah, that's the 67th favorite G-Man on Twitter. You have 1 week left to get in our contest. Give us a written review on iTunes if you're not on
Twitter.
Give
that warning to BBC America, too.
Right.
You got 1 week left, BBC America.
But also this week, I want you tweeting at us all sorts of thoughts. One of the things I want to know is for those of you who have read the book, now that you've seen, we haven't seen episode 7, but now that you've seen this great miniseries, would you tell people to read the book or would you tell them... to watch the miniseries? Would you tell them to do both? Which did you prefer better, the miniseries or the book? That's for people who read it, read them and saw.
Now, I don't know if it's just because people like to tweet out or respond to those people they agree with.
Yeah.
But I've gotten a lot of people giving me the feedback that they were also bored by the book but loved the series.
Oh, great. Okay, good. Yeah, tweet at both of us. Let us know. We have new members of the Respectable Magician Club, Catfish. We have. Mm-hmm. Why don't you read these first two, and I'll read the second two. We have four new entries this week.
We've got Ashlyn Marie Strange at Teller Marie.
Hey, hey.
We've got Claire at Imagine Benedict.
Thank you, Claire.
I hope that's Eggs Benedict, because I love Eggs Benedict.
I think it's Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, I like to call him the Cumberbunch. Okay, we've got a couple more respectable magicians. C.H. Mayer at C.H. Mayer, and Lady Mertz at Nerd Words. That's two R's, nerd words.
Excellent. Yeah. Two R's in nerd. Thank you so much for joining our Respectable Magician thing. We also, remember, you can enter the contest by giving us an iTunes review. And so why don't I read the latest iTunes review for somebody to enter our Respectable Magician Club. This is a 5-star review. It's from somebody titled The Black Kraken. Thank you so much, Black Kraken. And the title of the review says, definitely in the top 20 of Napoleonic era magician-based podcast. Thank you so much, The Black Kraken. This is a long review. Let me read it to you. He says, I'm a contrarian when it comes to the standard idea of book-ending bad news between two bits of good news. First, the bad news. The host frequently mispronounced a lead character's name. It's like this, Norrell, not a Frenchie, Norrell. Now, the Black Kraken, let me put in an aside here that the BBC America announcer, when he's announcing the show, comes up, you know, on the next episode of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, he's saying it like Norrell. And so sometimes we get influenced
by
him.
Did mention that he's a contrarian, right?
That's right. The Black Kraken also writes, this might be grounds for a new war between England and the U.S. if they don't police themselves. This nails on the chalkboard of the British soul when we mispronounce it right. You're supposed to be hosts. You're not supposed to be channeling draw light. Oh, well, we do, though. The host's unfair treatment of Lord Wellington is also a crime. Obviously, the hosts have never suffered the burden of command like some of us. If the hosts were in the wars, I picture them in a wine-stained type of role. Hey, now.
Before
they would be quickly used up as cannon fodder. Ooh. But now, finally, the good news. Thank
you
so much.
Jeez.
The show and the host do a great job of making a boring, borderline unreadable book, except for its awesome footnotes, bell tinkling noise. Okay, he wants one of these, apparently. Quite exciting. Without even using the footnotes, it's a shame that the show will only go one season. I agree. Yeah.
And that is our old friend, the Black Kraken, though.
Yeah, he says.
Who has provided some feedback on other podcasts.
He ends this review by saying, now I may have to actually start watching The Strain for more of the quote-unquote magic between our hosts, even though the quality of that series jumped the shark after the first book. One final bit of criticism / bad
news.
Oh, boy,
more?
He says our podcast needs a lot more Joffrey. Thank you so much, The Black Kraken, another member of the Respectable Magicians Club.
I think every podcast needs more Joffrey.
Okay. So we got some great tweets about this episode. Let's jump into those.
Well, let me get, you know, I also received something else from the Black Kraken.
Oh, you did?
You know, we asked, we've asked several podcasts in a row for people to give us names for our network.
Right.
And he suggested we call it the All Jafreya Network.
The All Jafreya in honor of Joffrey? Like Joffreyan Empire?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's it. That's all I have to say for him.
Oh, thank God. What a buildup.
Well, you know, we ask people to give us something, and when they do, I like to say it.
That's right. Okay.
All right. I didn't say it was magic.
Proper amount of buildup.
It was magic in quotes.
All right. So we got some tweets from our good friend at HeyRef, that's Sean Gregan on Twitter. He says, in the book, the Raven King was still king. Technically, king in the south ruled as a regent by statute, meaning that I kept saying the Raven King abandoned his kingdom. And so he says the Jonanites, who are claiming the king as their symbol, he's still technically their king. Yeah, he left them 300 years ago, but he's still king.
Oh, got it.
Our boy.
That's like, remember when that girl broke up with me and I'm like, no, we're still dating, even though I haven't seen her in 3 months.
Hot. Yes. Okay. So our good friend Double M, Matt Murdoch
at Musical Concepts.
Yeah, he says my magician of the week is Drawlight. Despite looking completely absurd with his spoon, he remained invisible to Strange the first time he was in Venice.
I want to thank Double M, Matt Murdoch.
Oh yeah, he was great last week, wasn't he?
He was. It was educational.
All right. So one of our wonderful heavy tweeter members of Respectable Magicians is Maggie. Uh-huh. And I'm going to try, finally, to pronounce her Twitter handle correctly.
Okay, let's hear it.
Now, she sent us this YouTube file which said how to pronounce it, but it didn't have the L in front. So I'm going to believe it's Le Étoile 6. How that is spelled on Twitter, everybody should follow her. She's a giant Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell super fan. It's LESETOILES, then the number 6 on Twitter.
She's saying L'Étoile.
Yes. She said episode 6 has to be 10 feral cats out of 10.
Wow,
that's pretty
good. I agree.
She also sent a tweet that says, ha ha ha, when Gatcombe and Tatney reappeared. She said they're her first nominees for Magician of the Week, finding themselves back on the show. And then she says, how awesome is Flora? Yeah, Flora's pretty good, huh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She's not respectable, though. I just want
to
make that clear.
No, dear Lord, no. Catfish, there was another Twitter battle that happened this week when Sean Gregan, he asked people, he's like, okay, who gets the douchebag award from the show? Is it Team LaSalle's or Team Eyebrows, a.k.a. the gentleman with thistle down hair?
Oh, I know that you chimed in.
Right, yeah, I was like, well, we want to be nominated. We want to be on Doctor Who. We want to be in the sequel. Where are Bubba and Catfish in the Douchebag Award nominees?
Mm-hmm.
So he said he's going to give out the bronze to LaSalle or Eyelash.
Okay, good.
So LaSalle, so this is a tough one. Maggie tweeted, and she said it was tough, but she's going to go with LaSalle's Eyebrows, a.k.a. the gentleman with thistle down hair. He's a fairy. It's in his nature to be a douche. Gregan replied that he was on Team LaSalle's himself, but he said that LaSalle's needs somebody like first of his name, first of your heart, King Joffrey, to get LaSalle's into shape.
Nice.
Catfish, who do you like? Who would you have as your douchebag of the season?
Wow. Wait, well, hold on. Of the season?
Yeah, this, you know, you've got a lot of nominees. Who's it going to be?
Yeah, I think coming on super strong in a way that I didn't think he would be is LaSalle.
Okay.
I mean, at first he just seemed like, you know, kind of harmless, but basically he's become sort of east of the pond Donald Trump.
Oh, no. Hey, Catfish, breaking news, breaking news.
What?
Turns out we have another member of the Respectable Magicians Club who just got in, who just tweeted at us while we're recording this podcast.
Uh-huh.
It's Chroma... God, good grief. Okay, it's at Squid Girl. And that's S-Q-U-I-D-G-R-R-L. And how would you pronounce their name on Twitter, Catfish? What would you say there?
Oh, man. Squid Girl?
Yeah, and then the name next to it. What would you pronounce that?
Well, let's see. I would pronounce it
Chroma
Chromatophore Press.
Well, no, it's at Squid Girl.
Right. Chromatophore Press.
Okay. She or he tweets out and they say, really enjoying Lost Hope podcast, smart, funny, entertaining reviews of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Knurl. Thank you so much. And so now you're entered in the drawing. The hits keep on coming, don't they? That is
wow, that is amazing.
Do you have anybody else?
Chromatophore is a cell or plastid that contains pigment. So there you go, chromatophore.
I try not to judge catfish.
Okay, all right. I know you don't see pigment.
All right, folks, guess what?
Two weeks from today,
we were recording this on a Sunday. 2 weeks from today, I will be landing in Ireland.
Oh, my goodness.
So, please, folks, we want you to be in what... eligible for any prizes we give away. We've said it multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Tweet at us with hashtag Lost Hope Podcast.
Right.
Give us written iTunes review.
You can't
just give a star. We won't get a name to put you in the drawing for. So give us written iTunes review. And guess what? Please keep talking to us. Keep the interaction going. We love all the people we've been tweeting with. It's really, really been fun. I want to say there's a small chance that maybe we'll do a final episode where we review maybe some of the Blu-ray DVD extras. Maybe, because you guys have been such great fans. But
all right.
But next week is when all the big drawings are.
Absolutely.
So spread the word.
for whatever we have to give away.
At the very least.
The bell.
Catfish, we've gone really long this week. Let's burn through
it. How shocking.
We blather on. That's correct. Let's get to our Magicians of the Week. Do you want to go first?
Yes. I had three nominees for Magician of the Week. The bookseller for making a lot of food disappear, making it look totally different than he did from Whose Line Is Anyway.
Oh.
Steven for somehow spiriting Vinculus out of...
Right.
Out of
that's a pretty good one.
And Vinculus for spiriting away the hair on the top of his head. He was wearing a hat the whole season. Seemed like he had a full head of hair. It was gone.
Aww.
I'm gonna go off the board.
Off the board.
Yes, exactly. And I
am
going to give it to Dr. Jonathan Strange's new lady friend,
Flora.
Yes, for going off with Lord Byron and making her virtue disappear. Bam.
Terrible. That's CJGman67 on Twitter, listeners. Get him. You know what? I don't know. I have a feeling they're going to be almost every character in the show is going to be a nominee next week.
Okay.
So because I've only given it to him once, I want to give it because I've enjoyed him so much. I'm going to my Magician of the Week for his spoon. I'm going to give it to Drawlight.
Oh,
Drawlight is
right.
My
You've
Magician
never given
of the
Drawlight
week.
Enough appreciation.
Just I know. The bell. Any closing thoughts, Catfish, as we go into the last episode?
Well, I gave this episode a 10 out of 10. I'm the only thing that I hope is that this will all become clear to me what is happening where.
Okay.
As far as like what's going on with the ravens, what's going on with the fairies, and also, you know, interesting to see what happens with Steven, because there's two things that are being said about him. All season he was going to end up the king, or Vinculus claims he was going to be released. So we're going to see what happens.
Yeah,
to Steven.
Interesting.
And
the magicians will fail. That's a bad sign. It's one of those prophecies.
Yeah. And what happens with Bella? I mean, people are going to die, obviously. This is not a great, you know, this is not going to be everyone turns out okay, but what happens with Belle? Does she get reunited with Jonathan Strange? Do they live happily ever after until they have a baby that's fully tattooed?
Or what if they have a baby that comes out fully tattooed and with a thick head of luscious this is down here?
That's
the sequel writes itself.
Amazing.
All right, folks. Catfish has been sick. We got to get out of here. We want to thank you so much for joining us on
Lost Hope.